week, Dan and the Blade talk trade deadline deal. And now, your host, Dan and the Blade.
You know there, Mr. Blade, you know what is a sign of a high-quality radio program?
What's that?
When you introduce yourself. That's what
I was thinking that same thing, actually.
All right, how are you doing tonight?
Hey, everything's great over here.
Okay, fantastic. Well, you know what? Let's just get right down to it. As we all know, the trade deadline was this Tuesday, February 27th, and there was a whole flurry of deals that went down. And
let's, a CEO flurry of deals.
Yeah, I was almost going to say that. You know,
that's
these,
why I am the Blade.
Is that right? Maybe these days, though, you should say a Marc-Andre flurry of trades.
Ha-ha.
All right, you know what? Before we hit to all the ones that happened on the 27th and just before then, 2 weeks ago we had a major deal go down, and that was when the Flyers did what everyone expected. They finally shipped out Peter Forsberg. I think we all saw that coming. Although I had no idea that he was going to the Nashville Predators.
A surprise to everybody.
Now, is this going to be that final puzzle piece for the Predators? Because they were in real good shape before this deal.
Yeah, I don't really think so. And it's kind of easy to Monday morning quarterback it since it happened, 2 weeks ago. But he hasn't really fit in. He actually looks pretty bad. And did you see him in the shootout?
No, I did not.
He actually fell. I mean, I've never seen anybody fall in a shootout since they've started him. And he went in there and tried to make his, Norway Olympics move.
Oh,
and he fell. And he kind of crashed into the goalie. And, you know, kind of like slid slowly into him. And I was pretty unimpressed. I've never actually really thought as much of Forsberg as the rest of the entire free world seems to. I know he is kind of clutched, but the guy gets hurt so much, so often. He's so injury prone that I don't really know the talent that they gave up. It seems kind of steep, but you know, especially when you factor in those first and third round picks that they gave up. But
yes.
You know, if he comes in and you got to kind of look at it this way. What if he only plays the summer? I mean, up until the summer.
Right.
And let's say they get into the, let's just say they get into the third round of the playoffs, and he has 10 goals. Are you willing to give up all that talent and prospect and potential for 10 playoff goals?
Interesting point. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, wait a minute. Are those 10? What if they're 10 overtime goals? Does that count?
Well, then I think you're pretty happy with the trade. And everybody looks at the general manager involved and says, oh my gosh, what a genius, as if he was going to know that the guy was going to score 10 overtime goals. But since we both know that ain't going to happen, you know, I'm just saying that I don't think the guy scores more than 10 goals anyway in the playoffs. I don't care how far they go. I'll stick my neck out right here and tell you that. They can go all the way to the Cup, and he ain't getting more than 10 goals in the playoffs.
Wow.
So then you have to decide right there, since I just decreed that he can only score up to 10 goals, is it worth Scotty Upshaw, Ryan Perrant, and a first round and a third round pick from this year? Is it?
Okay, so you're telling me that even if he stays healthy, you think that what he generally is going to contribute here is not worth what they gave up.
I don't know what he's going to contribute, but he might contribute a little bit more than you think.
Ouch. Man. Did I say contribute?
I believe you did.
Ugh. Sorry about that.
Don't worry. The dentist today was talking about how she was cementing my teeth together.
Yeah, you know, we could fix all that in editing anyway. What's the difference?
Later on, we could talk about insurance.
Can we talk about nuclear weapons as well? All right. Before we get to the deadline ones, here's a guy I gotta ask you about.
Yeah.
Anson Carter gets traded to the Hurricanes on the 23rd. How many times is this guy gonna switch teams? Why does he get passed around like a pipe, like the peace pipe? I don't have a finish for that, but
okay.
Thank you. We're off to a brilliant start. But yeah, why does Anson Carter get traded so damn much? Why can't he?
And not only that, it's a good question. Not only that, they got so little for him. They got a fifth round pick. What are you going to do with a fifth round pick? I mean, was it that important to get a fifth round pick that you had to give up Anson Carter, who seems to be an okay player?
I think at that point you're probably just getting rid of some salary if you're just.
Yeah, I guess. But are you going to do something else?
If you're the Blue Jackets, probably not. Talk about a team that has just not progressed that much since coming into the league. That would be your Columbus Blue Jackets.
Yeah, they've done very little. They've made some interestingly bad moves. I don't know. But let's not talk about teams that are boring and bad.
Oh, okay, that's true. Let's move on to a few more interesting deals. The Atlanta Thrashers, they go ahead and they pick up Alexei Zhitnik. And then the next day, the big deal, they get Keith Tkachuk.
Yeah. I like that.
You like that?
Yeah. I like it not because I think it was it's a great trade, you know, both ways. I just like those players being on that team. You know what I mean? I'm not talking value for value here.
Right.
I just think that Tkachuk fits in great on that power play. I don't know how often you've watched the Thrashers play or seen Kovalchuk, but that, to me, that guy is in the top three by far. And that's it. It goes, you know, as far as most exciting players to watch. You got Sid the Kid, you got Ovechkin, and you got this guy, Kovalchuk, because the power that he possesses in that shot is awesome. And whenever they go on the power play, whenever I'm sitting here watching games on the ticket, and I'm flipping around the dial because I don't have anything interesting to watch. I see a Thrashers game, and I'll go, all right, well, let me see if they're on the power play. And when they are, I sit up because I just love to watch that guy rip it. He's got such a shot, and it flies, man. It's heavy, and it flies, which is a combination that's kind of rare. Think about him out there ripping those hard shots from the point, making some good moves from the point because he plays the point. And then you got Tkachuk down low trying to bang that stuff in. You know, that's going to be very interesting.
All right. Now, does this pretty much guarantee Atlanta their first postseason berth?
It better, because I don't know what else they could do.
I'll tell you what. I think if they don't make the playoffs, GM Don Waddell, would he be out on his way out the door after having all this talent for the last few years and not making the playoffs?
But is that his fault? If he acquires the talent? I mean, isn't that his job is to get you the talent? So he gets them the talent, and then they don't make it. I think it's if you're looking for blame, you got to go with the coaches, right?
That's true. That's true.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Now Tkachuk comes all the way over from the St. Louis Blues, and then the St. Louis Blues went ahead and sent away their other big gun. They sent Billy Guerin over to the San Jose Sharks. Now.
Yep.
Then this is like the third move that we're talking about where it seems like it's a big deal forward going to a team that's already got a lot going for it. Another potential final puzzle piece.
You mean for the Sharks, huh?
Yeah, I'm talking about, yes. I don't mean Willie Niemann and going back to St. Louis.
Willie Niemann was quite popular here in San Jose, I can tell you that.
Oh, is that? Well, I'm sure, you know what? He's a good, gritty kind of guy, so I would imagine he's popular
he's
everywhere.
Stirred it up.
All right, now, Billy Guerin on the Sharks. What do you think?
Yeah. I don't know. Every time I think that guy is going to be that good, then he goes and he scores and he's good. And I felt that way about him for about 8 or 9 years when there was a slew of holdouts. I don't know if you recall this, but it was about 8 or 9 years ago when he was with the Devils, and there was like 3 or 4 big name players that weren't in camp and sat out the first half of the season or something like that. And he was one of those guys. And I kept thinking to myself at the time, "Who are you? What, you know? You're not that good. You know, you're good, but you're not that good to be holding out." They eventually signed him, and he came in and scored a ton of goals. And I guess he surprised me. And then, then he was on, the Olympic team, and he played well there. And I don't know, I never know what to think of that guy. What is he, like 35 maybe?
I think he's 36.
36? I don't know. But, you know, if you look at it, if you want to be optimistic and look at it through your teal-colored glasses, you'll see that all of a sudden the Sharks have maybe the most talented top two lines in the league. Because you got Patrick Marleau centering that second line, which is ridiculous because he's a first line player on any team except this one where Joe Thornton is. So you got Thornton and Chichu on that one line, and then I would think you have Guerin and Marleau on the next, and you've got some amazing depth there. Now, is it what they need? Is it enough? I don't know, because in my mind, they have other problems. And I know a lot of people have been looking at the power play and what's wrong with Chichu this year, and those are valid concerns. But to me, it's all every time that the Sharks don't play well, it's because they've gotten bad goaltending, and they've played poorly in their own end. And getting Bill Guerin doesn't solve those issues. So, you know, they also are in the West, and they have to be able to, you know, bang with the big guys. They can't beat the Ducks this year. Every time that they go head-to-head, the Ducks seem to get them. The one time, I think it's a one win. I mean, they may only have one win against them this year, and there was a lucky goal that was scored at the end. So, I don't know. You can make the argument that, well, then, hey, if they're trying to get past the Ducks, who obviously have the two-headed monster on defense with Niedermeyer and Pronger, that you need some scoring depth, and Guerin does provide that.
Speaking of the Anaheim Ducks there, not a lot of movement at the deadline for them. They pretty much stood pat. They had a couple of minor deals, but nothing to really shake things up at all. They were one of those teams that opted not to add that quote-unquote final puzzle piece.
Was that Brian Burke.
Was that the right thing to do?
Well, very controversial. He didn't like any of the deals that were out there. He actually has a blog that USA Today published that kind of went down ran down all the movements and conversations and, you know, suspected or proposed deals that he was involved in. And in every case, he felt like people were just asking for too much. The prices were too high, which is what a lot of analysts were saying about the trade deadline this year, that, yeah, there were some good players out there, but the price is pretty steep. And he decided that he didn't want to do any of those deals because he didn't like anything that he would have had to do. You know, I don't know. Is it the right move? That's your question. I don't know. I look at Anaheim, and I'm one of those sort of non-believers. Everybody else seems to think that they're an awesome team, but I don't really like their scoring depth. I know that they're deep, but I don't like their top-end talent for scoring as much. I know that they were looking for another defenseman, a number three type defenseman, and I don't think they have that solved. But they've got the goaltending, and they play a good, you know, style. And Niedermeyer and Pronger on the same power play when it's out there is pretty scary. I don't know. We'll see if the moves that the Sharks made kind of give them a kickstart. Then you're going to have to look at Anaheim and say, why did you let San Jose close the gap on you like that?
Well, you know what's interesting, I think, is that right now San Jose is sitting in the sixth spot. However, they are only 1 point ahead of Vancouver, who's in seventh. So if they finish at seventh, they're going to end up playing Anaheim in the first round.
Yeah, and that will be a heavily, heavily hyped series out here in the West Coast. Mm-hmm. That's become like the big rivalry now.
Really? So she's... Yeah. And if you're the LA Kings, how do you feel if you're sitting there and San Jose and Anaheim has become the big rivalry?
I think the way you always feel, you take off your skates and you go to the beach.
All right. Let's move on to some other teams now. All right.
We've got the marquee deal that we haven't talked about.
We do have the marquee deal. I don't want to jump to it right away because everybody else has been yapping about it, and we could kind of save it for a minute here. The Pittsburgh Penguins add some toughness, George Larocque, and they get Gary Roberts also. Is this what's needed for this team to, you know, help protect the kid?
I think so. I often think that the toughness factor is overrated in the NHL. I think everybody's tough enough. I think Sid the Kid is tough enough on his own. And, you know, you think those guys are going to come in and they're going to try to do what they know that they were hired for, which is to go in there and pound some people that are leaning on Sid. But, you know, Sid's going to score his goals, and he's going to set up the other goals just fine, whether they're there or not. The other question is, can Georges Laroque play enough to, you know, not be a liability? If he's only there for his fist, he's not going to get used in the playoffs. The one thing they talk about in the playoffs all the time is, you know, you got to have that toughness. Well, show me the Stanley Cup champion that in the finals had a fight that won or lost. Show it to me, because I don't remember ever seeing that. I don't think that happened with the Red Wings, with the Devils, with the Flyers, any of these teams that made it to the finals, with the Dallas Stars, you know, go all the way back to the Islanders and the Oilers and the Canadiens. You know, I think that's kind of a fallacy there, and I think that's old school thinking, and that's what keeps Georges Laroque around and valued at the trading deadline.
Interesting. All right, now I want to ask you about another one here. Florida Panthers. Todd Bertuzzi goes to the Detroit Red Wings. Panthers get Sean Matthias, a conditional pick in 07, and a conditional second-round pick in 08. How bad does the Luongo deal look now?
Oh, boy, did that look bad. You know, you had to think at the time that wasn't a good move. You knew that Luongo is the heir apparent to Martin Brodeur. They're really the only goalie out there that can truly carry a team for very, very long stretches. You know, that guy is an MVP candidate for the entire league. Every year he plays now. He's still young. He's very good. And even though I haven't actually seen him play very much, I just know, you know, what the analysts say, what the reviews are, and how he's always up, you know, for contention for the top honors. Man, that's a terrible looking trade. And then, you know, you look at it ahead of time and you say, well, you know, Todd Bertuzzi, that's good. But on the other hand, Todd Bertuzzi hasn't played in a while, he's got the back problems, and he hasn't been the same since the hit on Steve Moore. Was it Steve Moore?
Steve Moore.
Yeah, Steve Moore. He has not played the same since then. And on top of that, when Bertuzzi was at his best, look who he was playing with. He was playing with Marcus Naslund. That's what turned Todd Bertuzzi into a top big deal power forward, playing with Marcus Naslund. So, you know, you separate those two and you got to say to yourself, well, I don't know. It's not like he's got a history of doing this repeatedly.
So you didn't have any faith that the Bertuzzi Olli Jokinen connection.
No, I guess I didn't. I mean, you know, I sat and watched it and waited to be, you know, impressed or surprised. But and when he got there, you know, remember he actually started with quite a bang.
Yes, he did.
Didn't he have like a 6-point game or something?
He had 4 or 5 point something like that. He had a bunch of assists that first game, and then about, I don't know, 8 days later, he was done.
Yeah. Yeah, so was that Keenan that pulled the trigger on that one, right?
Yes, Keenan pulled the trigger on that, and then he pulled his disappearing act.
Yep.
I guess he woke up the next day and just, you know, it was like he woke up with the ugly broad next to him and said, oh, my God, what did I do? And
then
Then he went and got his clothes and just quietly snuck out.
Yeah, well, he's used to that. That could be the end of Keenan.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised.
This time he actually fizzled out, whereas before he always sort of flamed out. But this time it was sort of like, what happened to Mike Keenan? Is he still around? What's he doing?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. Usually the guy gets the boot. He gets fired. But here he just kind of like took himself out of it. He said, okay, you know what? I think I've had enough of this.
Not only does he get fired, you know, there's just weeks of speculation leading up to it.
Right.
And you hear all the rumors and stories about how he's hated intensely by the players and the fans and, you know, all that stuff. And then finally, kaboom! And this time, you know, it was just the firecracker was a big dud.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because I think back to not this year, but last year. At the beginning of last season, you know, I went to a few Panther games, and they had that opening. And, you know, unless you were there, you didn't see it, but they had this opening which consisted of Mike Keenan and Jacques Martin sitting at this big control board, like war room type control board, and they were like assembling the team, you know. And Keenan was like, "Okay, we need leadership," and he would push a button, and then like the file for Joe Nieuwendyk would pop up. You know, "We need scoring," and then they'd push another button, and only Jokinen would pop up. It was just, it was the hokiest thing I'd ever seen, and it was just so funny to see Mike Keenan like that. And
yeah, that was funny.
All right. Now on to the big one. I know you're
Can we talk about the big one already?
Yes, yes, we could talk about the big one and the trade tip. The Edmonton Oilers went ahead and gave up their heart and soul, quote-unquote heart and soul, Ryan Smith to the New York Islanders. The Oilers get in return two number one prospects, number one first-round draft picks, Robert Nilsson, Ryan O'Mara, and they also get the Islanders' first-round pick for this year.
Right.
This is a big gamble
on
the Islanders' part.
I'm saying that the Islanders are taking a chance. It really isn't the biggest chance of all time, but it is kind of risky considering that they've kind of bared their cupboard a little bit, you know, down below. They don't have a draft pick until the third round now.
You know, it's funny. Everybody seems to really like this trade. All of the talking heads, all of the the hockey pundits. Everyone seems to. The only thing that I've been hearing is what it's like on the Oiler end. I keep hearing, "Oh, geez, now it's such a sad day for Edmonton." And then you see Ryan Smith, who's got tears in his eyes as he's leaving, and how could Kevin Lowe do this? But I don't hear anyone talking about the big risk that the Islanders have put themselves into with this guy potentially walking away at the end of this season.
Well, we don't know how big of a risk it really is, because I'm thinking to myself, when I look at, you know, players that came out of the farm system or you know, players that the Islanders drafted and then tried to develop, they don't have a lot of success with that. And in fact, how many players on their team, on their current roster, came from their farm system or were drafted by the Islanders?
Let's see. Good question. Let me think. Does Rick DiPietro count?
Yeah. Yeah, but after that, what do you got?
Let me think. Jesus. All right, there's got to be somebody.
Yeah, well, find the guy.
No.
You got Steve Tambellini. Or Jeff Tambellini.
Yeah, Jeff Tambellini came in a trade from L.A., so,
okay.
So he's out, but that's a good one. Damn, who's on that fourth line of theirs?
Trent Hunter plays the fourth line.
Trent Hunter.
But he
was a trade. He was a trade.
Yeah, we trade. Yeah.
He was
right.
They did not.
From Calgary.
Okay. Yeah, you may have a real good point there.
You might. They have some guys that I don't know for sure that they drafted, but they have developed. There's a guy named Freddie Myers that now skates a regular shift on defense. They've got Campoli. He's an okay player.
He's a draft pick.
But. You know, you've really got to reach to find anybody that's, you know, an impact or a valuable player on that team, someone that they can't do without. And you have to reach really hard to find anybody at all. So here I am looking at two guys that the Islanders have drafted, one of which already has had several cups of coffee with the Islanders and hasn't been able to stick with the team anyway for whatever reasons. And my sources tell me that his style doesn't fit in with Coach Ted Nolan's approach. So, if the reality is, if Mr. Nilsson, who of course has the great background and genetics, if he were really lighting it up down in Bridgeport, he'd be with a big club. And, you know, he's not.
Well, you know, I think it's a very telling sign that the Islanders have had a number of injuries this year, and they've not called him up.
Right. All right. He's not been there. And not only that, they've also had some guys slumping. I mean, Garth Snow, sometime around December, was very concerned and went on the record as saying that he wanted to see more scoring depth. And what do we have? We don't have Robert Nilsson up there trying to fill that role. So, you know, this could be like a J.P. Dumont situation where everybody, you know, thought that Dumont was going to be a good player, except for Milbury, who said that he couldn't find anybody that would tell him that he would be a dynamite player. And J.P. Dumont, that trade hasn't hurt us. So I think it, you know, it depends on a couple things. Number one, if the most important thing, sort of deadline in this to decide whether or not, or to evaluate whether or not this is a good deal, is number one, what does Ryan Smith do in the summer? What does he do come July 1st? If he does not re-sign with the Islanders, then you scratch your head and say, uh-oh. Then after that, what you have to do is watch and see what all those other people do. You know, who turns into that first round pick that the Islanders gave up? And I'm not as worried about that because that's going to sort of be a bottom end pick in a draft that's not supposed to be very deep. So that one doesn't seem as likely. I think out of the three prospects, the guy that may have the most potential at this point is Ryan O'Mara, who is very young and seems to have more talent, perhaps.
All right, now, the Islanders right now, they're sitting in the seventh seed. They also added Richard Zednik the day before.
Yeah.
And I guess about a week before is when they added Bergeron.
Oh, yeah.
So they added not just Ryan Smith, but they added a few other components here.
They sure did.
Now, is this a team that's poised for a deep run into the playoffs?
It's a team that thinks it is. You know, when Garth Snow made these deals, he made them thinking that his team has a chance to go very, very deep. I don't know that he's actually thinking that they're going to win the Cup, but he's not thinking, hey, this is going to help us make the playoffs. You know, I've seen the interviews, and that's not why he did this. And you know, Dan, actually, after today, the Islanders are just 7 points away from home. From home ice advantage.
Really? They're that close. So basically 4 through 8 then is fairly bunched.
Oh yeah, more than that. 4 through like 10 or 11, they're all pretty close.
Hmm.
Yeah, so right now they're in 6. No, they're in 7th. They're 1 point away from 6th, and it's not a stretch. It's 7 points is a lot to make up. But if you're a team that has just made a flurry of really good deals as far as improving your product on the ice, and you're on the verge of getting your most talented offensive player back in Alexei Yashin, you got to think you've got a chance to make up 7 points. On the other hand, the 7 points that they have to make up is going to be against Ottawa. So Ottawa's going to have to play worse than the Islanders down the stretch here. But, you know, you figure there's about 36 points left to get. You know, somewhere along the way, it's possible. They can do it. They've gotten points in something like 14 of the last 16 games. Yeah. If Garth Snow will get all kinds of props from the media, mm-hmm. if the Islanders were actually able to secure home ice advantage, that's what everybody would be talking about.
Oh, I you know what? I think you'd probably have to give it to them at that point.
Oh, yeah.
If they go ahead and they finish in the 4 seed.
Yeah.
I asked you before with Keith Tkachuk, do these deals stamp the Islanders' tickets to the playoffs?
Do they what?
Do they stamp their ticket to the playoffs? Are the Islanders now a guaranteed playoff team?
Oh, yeah. But I think they were a playoff team all along. I think that, what happened was they went through a slump, you know, and then Blake finally started scoring again, and you know, they made these other deals, which are going to help. But I think that they had a team good enough to make the playoffs anyway. I thought that in the offseason. You know that.
Yes, I do know that.
So I would have bet a lot of money, even a couple of weeks ago, that they were going to make the playoffs. I just think I'm one of the few believers in this, but they have a very, very talented roster.
It's a very deep team, top to bottom, and everyone on there seems to be just a very solid NHL player.
Yeah.
All right. Yep. Now, looking at the Eastern Conference, okay, now we've pretty much set 1 through 7 because we already said the Islanders are in and Atlanta's in, and I'm going to guess that you'll probably go ahead and leave Ottawa and Pittsburgh in there. However, that leaves the 8 seed, and we've got Montreal, Carolina, and Toronto all within a few points of each other. Who's going in and who's going home?
Well, Montreal has no chance. They kind of have hedged their hopes on this new goalie that they brought up from the AHL, Halak, who played in the AHL All-Star game, and boy, he was very unimpressive in the skills challenge. And even though they're saying, oh, look, you know, he's doing really great, I don't know, you look at his numbers, they're not that great since he came up. Maybe he's doing better than Huey was, but I don't think they have the goaltending. I don't think they have the depth. The Islanders traditionally have always had trouble beating that team. This season they haven't. They play them again soon, I believe. There's no hope for the Canadiens. They're done. Stick a fork in them. They should have started the fire sale already.
Okay, so that leaves
Toronto and Carolina, and I guess it depends on how banged up Toronto is, because I know that they've got some key injuries. They are one of those teams that is nothing but heart and grit and mustard, you know, and they're cool to watch because of that. On the other hand, you do have the defending top champs. And they do still have some talent. Although, is it Eric Cole that hasn't played much?
Eric Cole, yes.
Yeah, so he's been injured, and I don't know the status of his situation. But I don't know. Maybe, you know, they seemed to be a Cinderella team last season. Maybe they really were. So I guess I would knock Carolina out to put Toronto in.
Well,
that's what I would do. What would you do?
You know, I think I might do the same thing. Toronto did just make a nice deal to pick up Yannick Perreault, who's having a pretty good season for himself out there in the wasteland that was known as Phoenix.
So we both agree that Toronto will secure the 8th seed.
Yeah, I think so. I think Toronto's headed for the 8th seed.
Okay, and then I'll say this. I think that is a really, really tough first-round opponent for anybody.
Anybody that faces
Toronto in the playoffs is going to have their hands full.
3 points separate 1 and 2 in the East, Buffalo and New Jersey. Who's coming
out
on top there?
Boy, it really just depends on the injury situation for Buffalo. They got so many guys that are hurt. And, you know, that Tim Connelly thing is still dragging on.
Oh,
I don't know. You know, if Buffalo's healthy, they're the best team. That's what it just comes down to that. Can they get healthy enough to you know, sort of fulfill their promise?
Okay, last question. We're almost at the end here. Who's coming out of the West? I know you like Buffalo in the East, provided they can stay healthy. Who do you like coming out of the West?
Wow. West, you got all those big teams out there, you know, at the top of the list. But, to me, this is a little bit like a crapshoot. You like, on the one hand, you like the Ducks in the playoffs because they are maybe the closest thing to Toronto on this side of the world. But on the other hand, I like the moves that the Sharks made. I'm going to go with the Sharks.
Really? San Jose's coming out of the West?
That's what I'm going to say.
Gutsy call. I love it. All right. Fantastic. All right, everybody out there in internet radio land or in podcast land or wherever the hell you're listening to this. Thanks for tuning in. I am Dan. That is The Blade. And you were just listening to Off the Post Hockey Talk.